Cool Time with Connor Phillips. With the Heating and Bathroom Centre. From boiler to complete bathroom installation, they do it all.
6 minutes after five, and because it is after 5 o'clock on a Wednesday evening, it means we're talking movies. And I'm joined by our movie master. What word did we use last week?
Savant.
I'm going to keep using that.
I shouldn't have said that out loud.
Our movie savant, Michael Fowler from Fact Cinema here in Liverpool. So get yourself online. Have a little look at the Fact Cinema and the words that come out of his face for the next at least half an hour, 40 minutes should make sense, and encourage you to go down there and have a little look at what's happening. How's your week been? Busy week amongst the Fact Cinema listener / watcher / eat popcornership?
Well, everyone's going a bit crazy for La La Land and Manchester by the Sea. So, yeah, it has been a fun and busy week, in fact, at the moment.
Well, we are going to talk about La La Land in a bit. We're not going to talk about it straight away. I'm just having a little lockdown.
Hold that card close to your chest.
I am, because I usually what we do is we go through the box office top five, right? But I'm going to go through the box office top six.
Oh, top six. Isn't the film you've seen Why Him in the 10th?
It's not. I said Why Him's in 10. We talked about that last week. And Why Him, Bryan Cranston playing a dad, jealous dad, daughter, in love with this fool, and hilarity ensues. Don't know if you call it hilarity. It's kind of, you know, it keeps your attention for a good, I don't know, 58% of the movie. Worth going to see if you just want to go and see something a little bit stupid. But anyway, we'll start with the top six. There's a reason for a top six. Right. I'm sure you all know why I'm doing a top six and not a top five if we're going to preview La La Land in a second. But anyway, if you're not getting it fully at the moment, we'll start with number six. And I'm glad we're starting with number six, because it's a movie made on quite a small budget, a movie with one of the most underrated actors in Hollywood, if you ask me, and Casey Affleck. Ooh. It is Manchester by the Sea.
Yes, so Kenneth Lonergan, who I've gone out and seen a film he did previously, which is Margaret, and and the struggle he had to actually make that film is incredible.
That's from memory, right? That's a 6-year struggle and 3 court battles, wasn't it, with that movie? Yeah.
Yeah. So he had a 3-hour edit of that film, Margaret, and they wanted him to get down to about 2 hours 40, but he refused. And he was going to court battles with the studios forever. I don't think I would have that kind of determination about my film, but he did. And eventually the film came out. It's one of the best films of the 21st century. And now he maybe got a bit more free rein when he was offered Manchester by the Sea by Matt Damon and John Krasinski.
Yeah, so that's Jim from The Office and him off of the Bourne movies, if you don't know who Matt Damon is. Now, from the battle that he did have, it was one of those battles that it brought him to the attention of the studios and then brought him to the attention of audiences.
Yeah.
And people said that, look, you're getting your opportunity here, right? Free rein to make your masterpiece if you want it. And from what I've read, he's not too far off that.
Exactly. Yeah, it's he's suffered for a while with not being able to get funding for films, but probably because of his notoriousness with the studios. But in Manchester by the Sea, he's been given a wealth of talent with Casey Affleck and Michelle Williams, and it's the story of a young man whose brother dies and puts him in charge as guardian of his teenage son. So he has to look after his nephew and go back to the old town where he grew up and has been trying to avoid for the last 20 years.
Now, last week we had said that it cost $8.5 million. It was sort of garnishing in and around $20 million, which we thought was a success in itself, up to nearly $40 million in the box office.
Yeah, well done.
Since we spoke last week. So a movie that some people are saying it's heart-wrenching, gut-wrenching. It can be quite sad. Like, I don't know the premise of it. The plan tonight in my life is to go and see La La Land, right?
Mm.
But I imagine with the popularity of it, it could be difficult to get tickets into the screening. You can't always get into the screening if you want. The one you want to go and see, and if I have to fall into a second, Manchester by the Sea will be that. How's it been? Has it been revered, or how has it been received?
Yeah, totally. It's 5-star reviews all around. Like, better, like, critically reviewed, it's better than La La Land. You know, if you're going to count stars alone, but obviously La La Land is bright and happy and people want that escapism, whereas Manchester by the Sea is maybe a little bit more serious tone, but no less rewarding. Yeah, really beautiful central performances and a story that really will it'll hit you in the stomach and you'll have a little weep, but it'll be so rewarding all for it.
That is, we're talking about Manchester by the Sea, which is in cinemas now, number 6 in the UK box office. And that's the voice of Michael Fowler from the Fact Cinema here in Liverpool. You're listening to Full Time. I'm Connor Phillips. Right, at number 5, we've talked about it quite a lot, but it is still hanging in there. It probably has just about made its money back. Passengers.
Oh, yeah. So this was the film with Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence, two gigantic actors, probably the biggest actors in the world. And they are on a spaceship which is on a 120-year journey through space, and they're supposed to be put into some kind of cryogenic freezing, but 30 years into this 120-year journey, they wake up unexpectedly. It's a bit of a problematic film. Some people are saying that it's what some of the actions Chris Pratt takes are selfish and maybe a bit cruel. Yeah, it's not been massively well reviewed, though. I actually met someone the other day who said he really liked it.
Nearly $250 million is taken at the box office after a $110 million budget. So what the rule of thumb is kind of 2.5, if it makes 2.5 times its money, it makes its money back. Yeah. Or it's made a profit, sorry.
Yeah, I guess so.
Somewhere in a region of that. How is the relationship between he and Lawrence in the movie itself? Because this seems to be what's bonded it all together, and they're just using the Hollywood A-list dumb, if you like, of both of them
and
fusing them together.
They're absolutely charming, but you've just got to get over the fact that that all their love and romance has happened because Chris Pratt's character has done something extremely unforgivable and selfish, and for some reason Jennifer Lawrence's character actually forgives him for it, which is like mind-blowing. Maybe she has no choice, but I don't think she's as angry as she should be at him.
That's one of the things I've read many, many times about that movie. It is at number 5 in the UK box office, dropping from 1 to number 4. I didn't see this up there for a long time. I was surprised it was there last week, is Assassin's Creed.
Yeah,
it hasn't been reviewed massively well, and sometimes I think it's unfair to talk about other reviewers' reviews, but from a positive note, they don't really make video games that well in the world of cinema, and some people calling this one of the best, even though it's not a massively deep yardstick.
Yeah, I really wish, because I love my computer games, I really wish that you could make computer game films and they actually be good. I was holding out a lot of hope for Assassin's Creed with Justin Kurzel's directing it. He did Snowtown and the adaptation of Macbeth in 2015. And, you know, after a lot of bad video game films, this kind of looked like it was going to be a great thing. It had Michael Fassbender and Marion Cotillard starring. I think what happened really, this was had a plot that was just so dense and you couldn't get involved in it in any way. There's lots of giant graphic-y, computer graphic-y scenes, which just...
So give us, if you're a computer games fan, give us the premise of the movie. Give us the premise of the video game, first of all.
Yeah, okay, so there's a secret network of assassins in the world, and one of the things that actually happens in this world of Assassin's Creed is that they do a thing called genetic memory, where you or I could get plugged into this machine and go back into the past to discover our ancestors in ancient Spain, and we could perform all the acrobatic assassin stunts that they did back then.
All right. So yeah, you tap into your ancestors' psyche and
lot of parkour around like ancient Florence.
Yeah, I've seen Fassbender. He brought a gym with him on site just to make sure he was in tip-top shape. So fair play to him.
Yeah, you've got to be.
He's at number 4. I'm absolutely delighted with number 3. It is still hanging in there. In fact, it's gone back up 1 or perhaps 2 from last week. Moana's still in there.
Yeah, good.
Still
yeah.
Haven't seen it though.
Oh, well, it's a really, like, in the top line of Disney animations that have, like, we've had Zootopia, Frozen, Big Hero 6, all brilliant Disney films, and Moana comes out and it smashes them all to bits. You've got a great lead in Dwayne The Rock Johnson. It's a story about a girl who is the daughter of a leader of a Polynesian tribe, and she has to go and save them by meeting demigods and fighting giant monsters, and with just amazing songs as well. Like, I'd rival Frozen for songs as well.
Right. Budget, $150 million. What has it taken?
$1.2 billion.
$500 million. Oh. I like it. It's a good sort of upbeat, positive movie, and it's beyond all of the other movies we've spoken of at the moment. Because, you know what? I love hearing that an animated movie has made lots of money, because it's not like you can shoot a movie in 6 months. La La Land, they did 2 months prep and then they shot for 4 months. That's a 6 month project, perhaps 7/8 months when you take post-production into it. But one of these movies like Moana takes years.
Yeah, yeah.
3 and 4 years as they lock everything together, and as they make it, the technology changes.
And it's amazing how it all stays relevant as well. Like, to think of a story, because they'll be thinking this story 5 years ago as well before doing that, and so it has to be a timeless story every time. I'm always blown away by how Disney and Pixar work. But
superb. Good to see it now. It's back up there. Another £1 million is taken this week. Number two, Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. Give me the rundown as to who's in it, how good it is, and why it was the biggest film of 2016.
Well, it's Felicity Jones starring, so Britain's own. I always kind of wonder why in Star Wars all these people that are from kind of prisons or working class families, why are they all so posh? So Felicity Jones stars. Can you believe Felicity Jones was in a prison?
I don't know.
But anyway, it was a lot of fun. Felicity Jones' character Jyn Erso is the daughter of a very clever weapon scientist who has basically invented the Death Star, and her and a raggle taggle team have to steal the plans to the Death Star so they can then pass it on to Luke Skywalker in Episode 4 to destroy that same spaceship.
And the question I asked you last week as well, I'll ask you it again for anybody who wasn't listening last week. If you have no interest in the likes of Star Wars or any of those movies that have gone before, can you watch this as a standalone movie?
Yeah, totally. Like, obviously, it's a lot of fun to see all the little nods, but you've got some really good performances. The characters are really, Diego Luna's like a Captain Carillion, I think it's called, or something like that. He's just totally charming, totally cool. And you got this really anarchic, sassy robot who will just have you in stitches throughout the film.
And at number one in the UK box office, that's the voice of Michael Fowler from Fact Cinema. I'm Connor Phillips. This is Radio City Talk. This is Full Time. It's, of course, La La Land, taking £6.5 million in its first weekend. I'm not going to ask you for a review on this one just yet. I'm going to ask you to stay stoic. Don't give away anything from your facial expressions as to whether you liked it, disliked it, or somewhere in the middle.
I speak in a monotone, robotic voice.
Normal, nothing changes there. So I am going to see this evening, but we're going to get the views of Michael Fowler from the Fact Cinema to see what he thought of it straight after this.
Full Time with Connor Phillips. With the Heating and Bathroom Centre. From boiler to complete bathroom installation, they do it all.
It's Radio City Talk. I am Connor Phillips. I'm joined in the studio by Michael Fowler from the Fact Cinema just after 5:30. Look at Twitter there. The Twitter says this, okay? With La La Land out, Michael Fowler from Fact Cinema has admitted he clapped at the end. What movie has made you clap at the end? So we'll dig into this in a second. If you would like to give me your views on this, 01517081059 at Radio City Talk. I don't know. I don't think there's ever a movie that's made me go, yay, because it's a movie and they're not going to hear me.
Not going to hear you. Yeah, yeah.
Just a quick one. Are you that guy who claps when the plane lands?
No.
It goes, I
just enjoyed the opening sequence. I didn't clap at the end of this film. I clapped at the opening sequence just because it just felt like I needed to. I just had to give it a good old clap. It was just phenomenal. But I remember being, I think I've told this story a few times, like deja vu here, but I watched Shaun of the Dead in the Odeon in Leicester. The cinemas are in Leicester, I think. I don't even know if that Odeon's still there. But yeah, I remember everyone clapped to the end of Shaun of the Dead. They really enjoyed it that much.
Right, well, I want to know what has made you clap. What movie has made you go, do you know what? You know what? David has just tweeted in just now. None yet, but I've been in three screenings where there was an applause. Les Mis, Selma, and...
Oh, not to Selma. Selma's great.
The re-release of Napoleon, the 1927 movie, which you talked about in the show about a month ago.
Wow. Did they go to say it a fact?
I have no idea. So I don't think David had enough characters to tell me that. So thank you very much, David, for sending in your tweet at Radio City Talk or at fact_cinema, because there's a little gif that Fact Cinema has just posted. It's the gif from the opening scene, because he says, or indeed Fact Cinema say it, that it is that good. Right, tell me about La La Land. As soon as I'm out of here at 6:30, first thing you do is get in the car, and I'm going to see it tonight. I've just been told, let me just check. Yes, the other half has tickets booked and confirmed.
I think I might even struggle to talk about La La Land, because I know when I really enjoy a film, I do find it so hard to articulate how much I enjoyed it. And La La Land is one of those films. From the very opening sequence where you're at a traffic jam and a woman gets out of her car and just starts singing and dancing with every other single car in the traffic jam in all one shot, and then it zooms out to this giant expanse of Los Angeles, and all you can see for miles is people stood on top of cars shaking their breath and waving their hands, and it says La La Land, and you know you're going to love the film for the rest of the next 2 hours.
I'm a bit of a contradiction, right? I have come from a bit of a drama background. I've done a drama degree, and I did West End stuff and musical theatre, etc., 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 right? But I have fallen away in recent years for my love of somebody who just wants a cup of sugar so that I start singing about it. Les Mis annoyed me to a little degree.
Les Mis was... I've never seen the musical, but that... I really was very angry that someone made me watch that.
Yeah,
Charlotte.
But Charlotte, if you're listening, it didn't really grab me as it grabbed many people, and it got massive Oscars that year.
Yeah,
and
yeah. I have a loaf of bread.
Exactly. So I appreciate the art of the musical because of the background that I've come from. Yeah. But I need to know that this isn't that before I go and see it.
La La Land is not that. It's a film that has brilliant, side heartbreaking, brilliant romantic story.
Mm-hmm.
There are fantastic musical numbers that just leave you wanting more.
There's a consistent spoken narrative in this.
Yes, yeah.
There's a script.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. So there is talking for a lot of the film. And, you know, Some of the best moments are when they're discussing, you know, what they're going to do with their future, or when they meet and they're walking down the line. It's really good dialogue, and you know, I've got to say, the performances from the two leads in this film, I just want to move on to that. Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling, it's kind of phenomenal. So Ryan Gosling learned to play jazz piano,
the hardest kind of piano.
Yeah. And before making this film. And you said this film was made in 6 months.
Yeah, so I've heard, I think it was Ryan Gosling talking about it, that there was a six-month process. There was a two-month rehearsal process.
Yeah.
During the two-month rehearsal process, Emma Stone could go away and do some of her dance numbers. Ryan Gosling would join in later on at some of those dance numbers.
Yeah, I heard actually on Graham Norton that they said... they sent Emma to do some tap lessons on her own. They sent Ryan to do tap lessons on his own. But they did it separately. And then they'd be like, oh, how's Ryan getting on? And they'd be like, yeah, he's amazing. And then he'd be like, how's Emma going on? Oh, yeah, she's doing really, really well. Like on like a low day or whatever. So they'd up their game. And then when they met each other, Emma Stone was thinking that Ryan Gosling was going to be like phenomenal tap dancer. And she saw him. She's like, I got this.
Yeah, fair play to both of them, because as you said, he went away and learned to play the piano. So there was a 2 month rehearsal process, and then they had a 4-month filming process. Mm. And I think the opening scene that Fact Cinema have just gift their Fact_Cinema on Twitter. So it's actually really nice. I'm really intrigued as to what that is. It was done in one take. A lot of it is done in one take. Yeah. And the director, is it Damien Chazelle, is it?
Yep. Director of Whiplash.
That's why he ended up talking to Ryan Gosling about a different film, something completely different, which they're doing next. And he said, what are you doing at the moment? Oh, I'm trying to get this one off the ground. It's called La La Land. It's a thing with a thing and a thing. And he went, actually.
Yeah,
I think Ryan Gosling sees himself as a chameleon in many ways, because he has been pigeonholed as just, you know, a talking six pack. And he had been pigeonholed in years gone by as one of those kids who could act. So he's going right through everything.
I disagree with that he's ever been pigeonholed. One of the very early films in Ryan Gosling's career was Lars and the Real Girl, and just before that he was due to be in the Peter Jackson film The Lovely Bones. Okay. So he's due to be in The Lovely Bones, and he put on a lot of weight to be in The Lovely Bones to look like a dad, because he wanted to look like he's very young. He thought, if I put on a lot of weight, that's how I'll look a bit more like a dad. And Peter Jackson saw what he'd done and said, well, I don't want you anymore. I wanted beautiful Ryan Gosling. So recast Mark Wahlberg, is it? So recast a different actor in that role. So Ryan Gosling's there, like, he's put on a lot of weight. It's this handsome six-pack Ryan Gosling. And so he goes and does a little indie film, Lars and the Real Girl, where he plays a chubby little brother who falls in love with a life-size doll. Pleasure doll.
Okay.
A very funny film. And so I don't think you can ever say he's been pigeonholed, because he's then gone on to do Drive, which is cool.
But I think we, and include myself in the media here, we like to pigeonhole people sometimes. And I agree with you, he has kicked against that. And I think this is one of the reasons he's gone and done La La Land. But very quickly, before we go to the break, we talked about Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence earlier on about being two Hollywood A-lister stars who are working together and carry a film.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, these are at the same level. Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling, how do they interact together?
Well, they've done films before. They did Crazy Stupid Love, which was brilliant, and the romance was there already. So I think that's why they were picked, because films of old, you'd get Ginger Rogers and
Fred Astaire
to put them together. So I think that's why, and it's magic. I watched them through the whole film and I was thinking, I want to be them both. I want to have that relationship. I wish romance would touch me in the same way it's touched them. It hurt. It was that gorgeous.
And just to be sure, I'm going with my other half tonight. Tell me, Ryan Gosling, does he keep his shirt on?
His shirt is on most, disappointingly.
No, because you go to that and, as much as you go to the gym and try and keep yourself in nick, you go with that and you go with the girlfriend and you go, okay, I'm sorry, I'm not going to live up to that. He does that for a living.
I still don't think you're going to live up to a man who can tap dance, play jazz piano and look effortlessly cool at any moment.
Can Ryan Gosling finish off this segment, throw to the traffic and travel that's coming up next, and forward sell the fact that we're going to be talking about Jackie, starring Natalie Portman, John Hurt and Peter Sarsgaard? No, he can't.
I'm going to say he could probably do it backwards and in heels.
Hold on a second. Is he given the opportunity? No, he's not, because that's what I'm doing right now. All that stuff's coming up next. In your face, Ryan Gosling. It's Radio City Talk. Myself and Michael Fowler here on Radio City Talk for the next 12 minutes. He is from the Fact Cinema. We've already run down the top six of the UK box office. We've already talked about La La Land, but let's talk about the other big release this weekend. It's probably the only thing that's going to go even close to rivaling La La Land in the box office, but I don't suspect that close. But it is, and has done, it's garnished a lot of attention. It is Jackie, the life of Jackie Kennedy. Or yeah. Jackie Onassis, is it the same Jackie?
Jackie Kennedy Onassis.
Yeah. So it features Natalie Portman, John Hurt, Peter Sarsgaard, and also Richard E. Grant has got a role in this as well, which is brilliant. I love Richard E. Grant.
Yeah, fantastic to see him playing a kind of more serious role and maybe not something so hammy as he maybe played in the Spice Girls.
I can't believe he went there with the Spice Girls movie. Right, we'll talk about it in a wee second. Let's get a few of these in. We're talking about the fact that La La Land made the aforementioned Michael Fowler stand up and clap his hands in the middle of the cinema. What movies have made you clap? I clapped after watching The Prestige from Peter Dodd. I think I was particularly fond of that one as well.
Yeah, the Prestige was good. Really good twist at the end as well. With learning what Hugh Jackman actually did for that magic trick.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I did. And thank you very much to Rathachard, Tony. Now, Rathachard, he won tickets last week to go and see Prevenge, which is coming out in the second week in February at a Fact Cinema near you. Prevenge, I clapped at the Fact Cinema Prevenge showing. Of course he did, because the star actor and director was sitting in the front row. Yeah.
And he was thankful for the tickets.
He won the show last week. Thank you very much.
Very worthy winner as well. What a nice man.
Rathachard, thank you very much for getting in touch. And then he said that can't read that out. Yes, it is. It made him laugh and wince at the same time. All right. So thanks very much for that one. Right. So let's get into this. Jackie, Natalie Portman, John Hurt, Peter Sarsgaard. What's the premise of this one? Because it's almost an unwritten story.
Yeah. This is about Jackie Kennedy after her husband, JFK, was killed. She had to kind of wrap around her family, and through all that grief, she had to work out a way of preserving her husband's legacy and her own life. And so it's all about being her media savviness and also just emotional state at the time. Just an absolutely I don't think it's something anyone that could really relate to or understand. And this film's going to try and pitch that to us, I think.
I like the fact it's running at about 99 minutes. It's not one of those movies that's going to go on and on and on. Mm. With regards to political movies, it's a very interesting time to have a political movie out, but it can, from a film perspective, at least capitalise on that. The fact that people do want to look back at times when things perhaps weren't as rosy and positive, but we always got back as human beings to a place where we were lifted by our own spirits, if nothing else.
Yeah, God, yeah. I think, like, imagine the devastation of losing your nation's leader and then actually having to come back from that. That would be pretty crazy. I'm not... Well, maybe people in Great Britain would think a bit differently. Maybe Liverpool's voters. But I don't know. It's a crazy, crazy time. You've got Natalie Portman playing the character of Jackie Kennedy.
She looks incredibly like her.
Yeah, yeah.
Very well done, whoever's done it.
Yeah, it's a real, like, powerful and poised performance from her, I think. You know, she's a very clever actress that we've seen in everything from, you know, Star Wars to Wes Anderson films to Darren Aronofsky's Black Swan. She's someone that can just pull incredible performances out of the bag.
We spoke about Noah Oppenheim on the show not too long ago, actually. He's written this. Pablo Larraín is the director. What type of performance is he going to get out of the aforementioned Natalie Portman and, you know, the likes of Richard E. Grant?
Well, Pablo Larraín's maybe one of the most interesting filmmakers around. He's a Chilean director who he made a film called Tony Manero, which was... it was about a man who essentially worshipped Tony Manero, the character from Saturday Night Fever, and then in order to keep his pride and to live his dream of becoming Tony Manero, he goes around killing people. It was terrifying, scary, weird, but real and horrible. And then last year he did a film called The Club, which was sort of the other side of Spotlight. So whereas Spotlight maybe was I think Spotlight kind of was a watered down version of the events, in my opinion. The Club was the real kind of story of the Catholic Church covering some of their sins up. So
like Spotlight.
Yeah, it was four priests were moved to a little house in a small town after doing terrible things. And it was about the story of the cover-up and it being uncovered from their perspective, which I think is a little bit more interesting than the journalists uncovering
it. But that shows a lot about Larraín in the fact that he's not afraid to go toe-to-toe with the big issue. And there was this is a very divisive issue. And again, I'll reiterate the fact that the way in which the world is operating at the moment, it could be one of those movies we want to sort of tap into in some way, shape or form. It's done quite well. Venice Film Festival, it was premiered there. It's done very well, I suppose, from an awards point of view straight away. It picked up the Golden Lion at the 73rd Venice International Film Festival. What do these accolades say about a movie like this? Is it deemed to be a success?
Yeah. Well, all I'm seeing for this film is 5-star reviews. I don't think I've actually seen anything less. You know, from the very start, you're getting this focus on Natalie Portman's performance. It's everything is focused on her, and then the surrounding look and feel of the film. It's just it's like someone's painted a picture each time.
They've been very clever with this. So what they've done is they did they let it go into like 6 cinemas in the US, and they allowed it to create its own hype.
Oh, right.
Before they sort of let it go out throughout all their movies, cinemas. Fox, I think, was looking after it. And I was just reading earlier on that they'd done this. Right, let's stick it in a few cinemas and see what happens. It was in like things like the Arclight Hollywood, which is a small cinema but very famous. Mm. The AMC Lincoln Square, again, very famous. And it grossed $250,000 its open weekend just from doing those cinemas. So yeah. It's going to be a big cinema release this weekend. It is Jackie. It is at the Fact Cinema on Thursday?
Friday. It's from Friday. Yeah, it's just going to be, I think it'll be a very brilliant, well-done film. Billy Crudup supports in it. You'll notice him. He's been in kind of everything. He kind of pops up as a supporting role. But in this time, he's kind of got a bit more of a role to chew on. He's only called the interviewer as a character name, but he plays a pivotal part in this film as the person who's going to put the spin on the rest of her life and the legacy of JFK's.
Right, give me your fact character of the week, somebody who is in one of the movies at a Fact Cinema this weekend you would like to highlight.
Go on, Emma Stone, just because she was phenomenal. I just fell in love with her.
And let's get your fact movie of the week as well, the movie that you would say to people, go and see. We may not have touched it. It may be something at the Fact Cinema this weekend, or it could be La La Land.
I gotta say La La Land.
Ah, he's done it.
I wish I could say anything else, but La La Land, Emma Stone, Ryan Gosling, it was just the perfect combination.